Well, if you're just joining us today, we kicked off a series last week called Well-Versed, Finding New Hope in Old Songs. And the idea is that there's some principles, there's some wisdom that are timeless. They're just true at all times. So they were true last year, and they were true thousands of years ago. And so in this series, we are going back, we're going way back to the Old Testament book of Psalms. And if you grew up in church, you probably are somewhat familiar with the book of Psalms, but it's actually a collection, not just of songs, but also prayers and poems that were written by and sung by and spoken by the people in ancient Israel. And at some point, these Psalms were written over hundreds and hundreds of years, but at some point during their exile to Babylon, the Babylonians came in, they captured the Israelites, they took them out of Jerusalem, out of their homeland, and took them back to the Babylonian Empire. And it was at some point in their exile that they decided, we're gonna collect all of these poems, all these prayers, and all these songs, and we're gonna put them together in an orderly way so that our people can be reminded about our journey with God. And in them is some very, very real conversations with God, some very raw, honest conversation with God. And we kicked off last week talking about Psalms of Lament, Psalms where we just get honest with God about our struggle, our trouble, and our hardship. And today we are going to essentially look at an opposite psalm from a psalm of lament. We're gonna look at a psalm of praise, a psalm of celebration and worship of God. It's Psalm 95, and it says this: "Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation." And if last week you heard the psalm of lament and you were like, this is just too much of a Debbie Downer for me, this week's psalm is, again, gonna be the opposite, a lot more positive. You're probably already refreshed. He continues, he says, "Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song." And extol, it comes from the same word that they use to describe a battle cry. So it's lifting up a shout, lifting up a battle cry. Extol him with song. He's fired up about God, the psalmist is. He's excited about his faith, and it's a model for us today that we can get excited about our relationship with God as well. It's not a boring thing. It's not a subtle thing. It's not a laid back thing. It's worth celebrating. He continues, for the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In his hands are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land." Psalmist is describing creation and is stretching for the biggest language that he or she can use to find how to describe God, how big he is and how mighty he is. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord, our maker. Because of how big he is, we need to humble ourselves. We need to get low. For he is our God. Personal nature. He's our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. The psalmist is highlighting our personal relationship with God, the way he sees us. We are his people. We are his sheep. Now, if only it were that easy to just read a psalm like that and go, okay, that's what we'll do. We'll go out and we'll spend our days worshiping God and kneeling and being humble before him, and our faith will be exciting. It'll be worth celebrating. If only it were that simple. You see, for all of us in here, regardless of how long you've been a follower of Jesus, and even if you're not a follower of Jesus, we know that it's easy to be in a room like this and to sing really, really big songs about how big God is and how awesome God is, but then to leave and quickly get really, really focused on small, little nitpicky things in our lives. And it's as if we completely forgot about what happened on Sunday morning in this room. And if you're not a Christian, this may be the thing that turns you off to Christianity or that turns you off to church, is that you see us Christians sing about how awesome and loving God is, but then we leave church and we go throughout our lives and there's times where we're not so loving. And it seems as if we've forgotten everything that we sang about and everything we talked about on Sunday morning. It's like we walk out of this room and we go to lunch this afternoon, and you know, we ordered Coke Zero, but this tastes like Diet Coke. And so now I'm just getting upset with the person that's waiting on us, you know, and it's like the tip is going down, 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 you know, as the meal goes along. And yeah, I mean, God's awesome. And we were singing about it a few hours ago, but man, I'm just really upset about the service that I'm getting today, you know? Or you get home in the afternoon and your neighbor is cutting his grass and you're looking out the window and you're like, it looks like he's crossing the boundary there, like into our yard. And I don't really like the way he cuts his grass. So I'm probably gonna have to go have a conversation with him. And again, it's as if we have forgotten what we sung about and what we talked about just a few hours earlier. And there's a dynamic at play here when this happens. And again, all of us are fall prey to this. We are tempted by this at some point in our lives, but there is a dynamic at play, and it is a timeless truth. It's something that even the ancient people in Israel experienced as well. And it's this timeless principle right here, that people are really good at being critical. We're really good at being critical. And it seems like people have gotten even better at being critical as well over the last few months. Has anybody else experienced that? I mean, it used to be that if you wanted to criticize something, if you wanted to complain about something, you had to have like someone physically in the room to talk to, or you had to write a letter, or you had to pick up the phone. And now it's just as simple as sending a text, or I'm just gonna jump on social media and I can make a post and direct it at, you know, fill in the blank, whoever I'm trying to criticize, whatever I'm trying to complain about. Or you can just send an email. I mean, you don't even need to leave the comfort of your couch to criticize someone or something. This may be a surprise to you, but I've actually gotten some critical emails in the last 16 months or so. I get a lot of emails that are positive, they're encouraging, but occasionally I will get some emails that have some criticism in them. So I thought today is just a great example of how people are really good at being critical. I would show you some of these emails. And I thought, you know, I thought about blurring the names out, but then as I thought about it, I'm like, you know what? They were bold enough to email me directly. So I'm sure they'd be bold enough to just share with everyone here. So here's the first email that we're gonna look at today. I'm just kidding. We're not gonna do that. We're not. I did think about it this week though. I was like, that could be very, very effective, but people have just, it just seems like people have gotten really good at being critical. And I wanna just make it a little more personal for us right now. I think we have gotten really good at being critical. You have, and I have. I think all of us, if we looked at our lives, we'd say, you know what, gosh, I probably, whether it's the last few months or the last couple of years, I have a tendency to just be more critical. And it seems like the older we get, the better we get at it. That's where we get the phrase bitter old man. You know, no one has ever looked at someone in their 20s and said, yeah, it's just a bitter young man. There's no such thing as a bitter young man. It's only a bitter old man, an angry old man. And here's the problem with that. If we're all getting better at being critical, here's the question we got to wrestle with. What do we gain by being critical? What do we actually gain by being critical? And as you think about that, you may think, well, nothing. And certainly it's nothing positive. I mean, if you're just by yourself and you're being critical, all of us have been there, right? Something comes to mind and it's like you start that inner dialogue where you're critiquing that thing or complaining that thing. It's like nothing is changing. You're just getting yourself more upset, right? Or if you talk to someone else and you're critiquing something and they're on the same side of that issue as you, it's like, y'all are both just getting each other really, really fired up and no one's changing their mind and nothing's really being accomplished. And even when you talk to someone on the opposite side of an issue that you're passionate about, oftentimes it doesn't change their mind, does it? So you end up not accomplishing anything, and you've even potentially made the relationship worse by being critical. What do you gain by being critical? And you may be thinking, well, Adam, it's my job to be critical. It's my job to be critical. I'm a manager, and so I've got people that I've got to be critical of in order to help them, you know, or I'm an inspector. I inspect things, and I ideate and I create, and so in order to create new ideas, I've got to critique and be critical of the old ideas. I evaluate for my job. That's a big part of my job, so I really need to be critical. But here's the difference that I would make for us, how I would differentiate it this morning, that's not being critical. That's critical thinking. And there's a big, big difference. Here's what it looks like. Critical thinking aims to build up an idea or a person. Hey, how can we make this work? How can we make this better? How can we help him or her be better? Being critical just aims to tear down. I really don't like that idea, so I'm gonna attack it with everything in me. It's interesting, like these days, it's not just enough to have an opinion. You've gotta tear down all the other opinions out there. That's being critical. Critical thinking empathizes. It says, okay, there may be more to this story than I know. There may be a reason why he or she is in the spot that they're in or that the situation has come about. Being critical simply condemns. Critical thinking is charge neutral. You can come at it without much emotion, but being critical is almost always emotion filled. And as we are more and more critical, we add more and more emotion to the situation. Critical thinking creates a conversation. It begins with a question. How can we improve this? Or what could we do better? And then it begins a conversation. Being critical simply creates an argument. Have you experienced any of these things in your life? I imagine so. And here's the thing, critical thinking requires work and effort and intentionality to stay in this column right here. Being critical requires no work at all. We can put no effort forward and we will naturally begin to be critical. And being critical rarely leads to joy. I mean, you think about it, you get to the end of a rant where you're going off on something and we never get to the end of a rant and think to ourselves, man, I feel so much lighter. You know, I feel so much freer, so much more joyful. No, it's quite the opposite. It's quite the opposite. How do we feel when we've been complaining about something or stuck in that mindset? We feel weighed down. We're angry. We're frustrated. We're offended. We're stressed out. Our blood pressure rises. Our anxiety level rises. That fight or flight thing that goes on in our mind kicks in. And we get really, really stressed out. And here's the interesting thing that all of us need to pay attention to is that we carry what we're critical of. What do we gain by being critical? We actually carry what we're critical of. We see something in the news or we hear something from a friend, or there's some neighborhood gossip going on that we get looped into, or there's a situation at work and it just doesn't set right with us. We disagree with how it was done or how it was handled or what was said. And that's a normal response. That's a good response to have an opinion and to have a perspective of a situation. But in that moment, if we're not careful, we will choose to begin to walk down the road of being critical of that thing or complaining of that thing. And when we do, we begin to carry whatever it is we're critical of. It's maybe good to visualize it this way, that we all go through life and we've got a backpack. And as we go along through life and we see something we don't like, we pick it up. And we load ourselves down. We say, you know what? I really don't like what he did. Did you see the way he led that? It just wasn't good. Can you believe he said that? Yeah, I don't know. And then her, I mean, can you believe she wore that? Oh my goodness, can't believe she wore that outfit. You know, it's like, just load it up. And then as soon as we start critiquing and complaining, we pick it up and we carry it around with us through life. And then we also all know that we don't just typically critique something one time. Once we get a little bit fired up about something, once we see something in the news, we got to talk about it 4 or 5 times before we really feel like we've done it justice. So, you know, that afternoon at work, we talk about it a little bit more, and then we get home, and so we share it with our spouse. And then later that night, we phone a friend, you know, let them know. And maybe the next morning, first thing in the morning, just send an email. All you got to do is send an email. We load that up. And then we just pick this up. Sorry. And we carry this around with us through life. And the more we critique it, the more we carry it. The more we weigh ourselves down, and we do this without even knowing it. I mean, we thought that, oh, I just had that conversation and we kind of picked apart this one topic or this one issue. We really loaded it up with how we were right and they were wrong. And I feel like we just had the conversation and then we left it there. We don't realize, no, actually, you picked something up when you went into a critical mindset in those moments. And then we might lose our temper with our kids really easily, or we might get into an argument with our spouse or a boyfriend and girlfriend that seems really trivial. Or something may happen at work and we don't respond well, we don't handle it well at work, and we're like, wow, I overreacted in that moment. Or wow, I can't believe I had a really short fuse today with the kids. What was that all about? And we don't realize that it was actually because we picked up something a few hours ago, maybe a few days ago, or a few weeks ago, when we took a plunge into that complaining, critical spirit. And 99% of the time, this is not ours to carry. It's something we have no control over. We can't do a thing about it. It's not our responsibility. It's someone else's responsibility. Someone else has the control over that situation. We literally can do nothing to affect it. And so we carry the weight needlessly. We carry it for no reason, because we can't win. And then our relationships get affected. Our relationships with our kids or our spouse or our friends or our coworkers, they get affected because we're carrying this thing around. And the other thing that gets affected is our relationship with God. If you're a follower of Jesus in here today, your relationship with God will be drowned out by the weight that you carry from the critical mindset. And it's almost as if the psalmist in Psalm 95 knew this. So he talked about this weight that we carry, and he tells the ancient Israelites to drop it. You see, I didn't read the whole psalm to you earlier. Only read the first half. This is what the psalmist says, starting in verse 7. Today, if you would only hear his voice. So up until this point, the psalmist has been speaking on behalf of himself or herself. And at this point, he's gonna start speaking for God, on behalf of God. Here are God's words to you. Do not harden your hearts. Isn't that what happens to us? When we begin to complain, when we begin to pick apart those little things, our hearts get hardened, don't they? God's saying to the ancient Israelites, do not harden your hearts as you did at Meribah, as you did that day at Massa in the wilderness. And he's referencing these historical accounts of when the people of Israel began to complain. I mean, they had lived in Egypt. They were under slavery for hundreds and hundreds of years. And then Charlton Heston parted the Red Sea and led them out of Egypt and out of slavery. And they get out into the desert. They're a free people. And what do they start doing? They start being critical of Moses. Moses, you brought us out here. We're gonna die out here, Moses. Our livestock, our kids, us. What are you thinking? What a terrible leader. Who elected Moses? Who put Moses in charge? Oh, God did? Oh, okay, you know. They just start being critical, and they start complaining about the situation that they're in. And the psalmist, on behalf of God right here, is speaking, saying, hey, don't harden your hearts as they did. And it wasn't even them that did this. It was actually their ancestors. He says, don't harden your hearts at Meribah, Manasseh, Massa, where your ancestors tested me. They tried me. Though they had seen what I did, they saw firsthand the greatness of God, the bigness of God, the miraculous nature of God, God's love, the fact that, oh wow, God really is for us. I mean, all those years that we were in slavery, we doubted it, but then we walked through on dry land. We walked through an ocean and there was water on either side and we were freed from Egypt. They had seen what God had done, but yet their hearts still got hard because they got critical. They started complaining. For 40 years, I was angry with that generation. I said, they are people whose hearts go astray and they have not known my ways. So I declared an oath in my anger. They shall never enter my rest. And my rest here means the promised land. The ancient Israelites were promised land from God, a land flowing with milk and honey. And it was gonna be the place where they could truly unplug and enjoy the rest of God, the shalom of God, where life was as it should be. And for them, for their ancestors, because of their quarreling, critical spirit, it caused them to miss out on God's rest. And for you and I today, we are in a different covenant, a different relationship, a different arrangement with God because of the death and the resurrection of Jesus. So it's a different covenant, but it's the same result for us. A critical quarreling spirit can have the same effect on us. Being critical rarely leads to joy. And joy is one of the ways that Paul in the New Testament describes the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. And so when we drop into a critical mindset, it prevents us from experiencing the fruit of the Spirit. It becomes a block to us, an obstacle to us. And the psalmist would say that while being critical rarely leads to joy, being grateful, gratitude, paves the way to joy. And this is not just like saying thank you. A lot of times we can lighten this, and it's like, I know, like for my kids, when we're anywhere and someone like gives them a drink or brings them some food, I'm like, hey, what do you say, boys, you know? And like without even looking at the person, they're like, thank you. And I'm like, okay, they don't even know what they just said, right? They just know that's the right thing to say. And that's not what the psalmist is talking about. That's not what this word is deep. It is a heart level emotion and a heart level action. It's something that flows from the heart and the mind. A genuine gratitude leads to joy. Joy follows gratitude, not the other way around. And when we live in a critical spirit or a critical mindset, it is hard to get to joy from there. But have you ever noticed how it's really hard to be bitter when you're expressing genuine gratitude? When your heart is genuinely grateful for something, it is really hard to also complain about something at the very same time. So we have a choice to make. In life, when we bump up against stuff that we don't agree with, we don't like, we have an opinion on, and we're tempted to pick up the backpack and start loading down our lives with those things, we have a choice to make. Are we gonna be critical? Or are we gonna be grateful? When you allow yourself to focus on the greatness of God, like the psalmist talks about, other things begin to seem smaller. Your gratitude towards God, your praise, your worship of Him will lower the temperature of those conversations that you're in. They'll open your eyes to, oh yeah, this thing that we're quarreling about maybe is not that big of a deal. And when the temperature begins to lower, you won't miss out on joy. So instead of being critical, be grateful. When you're tempted to pick up the backpack, be grateful instead. And this is a lot easier said than done, but one of the things that makes it easier is building a habit of being grateful to God. In fact, that's actually the purpose of the Psalms. The reason why they wanted all these accounts of people praying to God, singing to God, having honest conversation with God, was to build a habit into the ancient Israelites of gratitude towards God and worship towards him. And so I would encourage you, you could actually find a variety of different ways to do this. There's small ways, you know, as you drive down the road before a meal, you know, don't just go through the motions of, okay, someone say grace, you know. Oh, did she pass away? Grace, she passed away 30 years ago, you know. Sorry, it's a movie quote. Don't just go through the motions of saying a blessing, but actually use it as an opportunity to show genuine gratitude to God. One of the ways this has played out for me is in a chore that all of us have to do. But because my wife, Kelly, and I have four kids, we have to do a lot of it, laundry. Anybody else in here feel like they're in a perpetual state of laundry? Anybody? Like, yeah, we do laundry all the time. It is as if we have trees in the backyard that are growing dirty clothes. I don't know how they either need to be washed, they are being washed, they're in the dryer, they need to be folded, and then it's like, as soon as that happens, it's like, there's more. I don't know, you know. So there are times, just the pastor being honest here, there's times where I am doing the laundry and I don't have a real positive perspective about it. I know that may be shocking to you, but a couple years ago, I noticed this, you know, this temptation I had to be critical in those moments, to be a complainer in those moments. And if I had had a long day at work, or, you know, if you know, we had been out and about going nonstop with sports or extracurricular activities and I was tired, the last thing I wanted to do was to do laundry, which is so funny because we have machines that actually wash the clothes for us. People from 100 years ago would be like, what are you complaining about? But I would get in that place. I would find myself in that place where I'd be complaining and I'd be critical. And what God showed me was, instead of being critical, be grateful. Be grateful for the kids that wear those clothes that I'm having to put into the laundry right now. And so I began to do that. I began to say, God, just thank you for the boys that wear these clothes. Thank you for the little lives that fill our house. Thank you for the laughter that happened today. Thank you for the moments they had interacting with their friends today. Thanks for the skinned knees and the bumped elbows and the other challenging things they face today that grew them up a little bit as young men in this world. Thank you for Roddick. Thank you for Rylan. Thank you for Jet. Thank you for Cashman. And what was amazing is that when I began to do that, all four boys came downstairs into the laundry room and started doing the laundry themselves. It was amazing. You should try it. You should try it. No, they didn't do that. Shocker. No, it just changed the perspective in my heart, right? Like, it changed the way I was seeing it in that moment. And all of a sudden, the complaining that I was tempted to do, the critiquing that I was tempted to do, I just set it down. And instead of this act, this chore that all of us have to do, instead of it being a drag on me, it actually brought me life. Brought me peace, brought me joy. What would that look like for you in your life? To find some different ways to practice being grateful to God, to build a habit of being grateful to God. One of my favorite authors, John Eldridge, talks about this idea he calls micro moments. And this is the term that he's given to these little things that you can do throughout the day that help connect you with God and help put you in a position where you can experience God. And one of the things he talks about in micro moments is transition, to leverage your transitions to connect with God. All of us, regardless of what season of life that we're in, we have so many transitions throughout the day. You know, we're getting up, we might work out, we're getting kids ready to go off to school, or we're going off to school ourselves, or we're going to work, or we're going to the gym, or you know, we're going to work out, whatever it is. And then the evening brings all sorts of stuff. The afternoon brings all sorts of stuff. Every time you drive to a meal and from a meal, leverage those transitions. When you're getting in your car, or when you're driving down the road to connect with God, you can use small ways like that. Or you can use large ways. Take a chunk of time and get away from the daily distractions. Go to a park, climb a mountain, go to a coffee shop, and spend some extended time reading his scripture, setting your eyes on the greatness of God, celebrating what he's done in your life personally. And whether it's big ways or whether it's small ways, when we do this, we find the greatest weapon that we have in our life, the greatest weapon against becoming an angry old man or an angry old woman. When we do this, we actually resist picking up the backpack. Or if we've already picked it up, it's the thing that's gonna help us take it off and drop it. This is how we fight against a critical spirit. And not just that, not just keeping the backpack off our back, but also opening us up to be able to receive the invitation that the psalmist gave us in Psalm 95. It's an ancient invitation, but I want you to hear it as if he is inviting you today to do this. Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song. That's really hard to do when we're weighed down by the backpack. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth. The mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it. And his hands formed the dry land. So because of that, come. Let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord, our maker, for he is our God. And we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. In the same way that a shepherd cares for sheep, that's the way our creator God cares for us personally. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for this ancient psalm written thousands and thousands of years ago. Thank you for preserving it. God, thank you for its relevance to us today. God, we do just confess right now that you are a great God and that we worship you and we praise you, God, but we also realize that so often in life, we get caught up in the little things. We get caught up in the small things. And we begin to make a really big deal out of them rather than making a really big deal out of you. And God, it blocks us from experiencing your grace. And God, the life that you offer to us. God, so would you help us? Help us in those moments when we're tempted to complain or be critical. God, help us in those moments to just be grateful. In Jesus' name, amen.